It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that is why I should not be allowed to use scissors unsupervised.
Well, yeah, back when we worked together, I thought we established that rule.
Yeah, not in this house, apparently.
I mean, that was, what, 10 years ago? Oh, yeah, 11 years ago?
Yep. No, see, listener, formerly Welsh listener, Stu, this last Friday, took the citizenship oath.
So, like, he passed all the tests?
He had done that a while ago, because, as you may recall, I think we had talked about this, he specifically decided to really move on it this year so he could vote against Donald Trump. And he did all the stuff, like, 3 weeks before the election. It was done. But all of the oath ceremonies were booked.
But he could still vote?
No.
No kidding?
You're not officially a citizen until you do the oath.
But they couldn't just have him do it at a courthouse or something just for the sake of allowing the guy to vote?
That was what I was saying. I was like, can't you just... Like, I assumed that was for your benefit, not because that's... No, apparently not. So he did not get to.
Meanwhile, tons of people voted for Donald Trump who have never taken any kind of oath of loyalty to the United States or any place else.
But that's okay, because those millions, those 3 million illegal votes in California probably evened that out.
If the United States decided, you know what, why do we just have naturalized citizens take oaths? Everybody should take one. Would you take an oath?
Absolutely depends on the oath. 100% depends on
would
the
you
oath.
Take the oath that Stu took? You don't know what that oath is.
No, and that's the funny thing. Apparently, you just respond to it. You don't say the whole thing. They say it to you, and you say, I will.
Huh.
And then they had to do the Pledge of Allegiance, but they didn't teach them the Pledge of Allegiance. So I can neither confirm nor deny that Stu was just really good at lip-syncing that one.
Well, he could have recited it in Welsh, and nobody would have known.
But
wait a minute.
They might have if they're all doing the Pledge of Allegiance and he's just there going,
your Welsh is excellent.
That he is complimented in many times. Anyway, this isn't even the point of the story. Because the story's not about Stu, it's about me and how I hurt my thumb. So, because this was happening, a very strange thing happened. I had an idea and I followed through on it.
Mm.
Yeah, I know. That, like, never happens.
Almost never.
So, Friday, he takes the day off to go do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday, while we're out shopping, I get some things. I get a pack of red, a pack of white, and a pack of blue party napkins. Square ones.
Yeah.
I get some tape.
Mm-hmm.
I get... Well, I eventually end up getting a vase. And I get 12 Slim Jims.
12 of them.
12 of them. And I create for him a bouquet of red, white, and blue flowers with Slim Jim stems because it felt like the perfect welcome to America.
That's right, pretty good.
And actually, he and I had been talking about them the other day. He has never had a Slim Jim or its British equivalent called Pepperami.
Hmm.
So I figured this was a perfect opportunity.
So that's like pepperoni
and pastrami, I think.
Salami,
yeah.
Maybe?
Or maybe salami, yeah. No, that was a whole other conversation where I heard someone from Britain on a video say what I thought was Pepper Army as a brand name, because okay. They said pot noodle and Pepper Army. And I'm like, I know what pot noodle is. I used to eat them when I was there. It's basically ramen in Britain, or cup of soup in Britain. But I didn't know what Pepper Army was, and I asked him, and he didn't know either. And then when I gave him the context, he's like, oh, Pepper Army. I'm like, okay, that's a problem. And yeah, we eventually figured out it was basically Slim Jims. But anyway, so I made this for him. But I did it so bad. I mean, it looked good, but I mean, what I did was I took scissors, and I opened them so that they were crossed.
Mm-hmm.
and the sharpest of the sides was up. The sharpest point was up. And then I would take the napkins and sort of work them down on top of it, impaling them, because you had to get the hole big enough for a Slim Jim to get through, but not too big. I tried earlier, like, folding them up like snowflake things and cutting the tip, but the hole was huge. So I did it this way. Even though I'm just basically pressing my hands down onto what we've established is the sharpest point of the scissors. I got through about 8 of them, just fine. Round number 9, just ran it right down the edge. It just took... You can, if you look closely, you can see the divot in the little hole in there. It was awful. And I couldn't even be mad at anyone but me. Like, as it's happening, and it really hurt, I'm like, I totally asked for this.
And you weren't finished.
I came up... Once we finally dealt with the carnage, I came up with another idea involving little, like, kebab sticks that worked perfectly once and then never again.
Why not?
I think it bent... It broke off the tip.
Oh, okay.
So I think I would have to have a fresh one each time. But so I kind of winged it, and then, like, for the last one, I did that same terrible way again. I was more careful and more observant, and also it would have been very difficult to re-injure that thumb because that had, like, 3 Band-Aids on it at this point. But, yeah, I was pretty pleased, and it was nice looking.
Good.
Not gonna lie.
Very good.
So, hello, everyone. Welcome to Citizenship Watch. Tonight's episode, Stu from Wales. No, welcome to the MagicalTalkingHat.com, the only podcast in the world that works hard every week to put the fun back into Fundamentally Flawed. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 301, and Bill of Rights Day, as it turns out.
Ooh, that's ironic and sad.
But that people used to call me that in junior high.
Oh, I see. Ah,
Bill of Rights.
I saw somebody call you Bill today, and then say that you were right about something. It potentially ruined the next 2 podcasts.
The Wright Brothers Day is on Saturday, so my brothers and I will probably enjoy that. Though, snap. We're not the Wright Brothers, nor are we related to them, particularly. Yeah. They're from the southern part of England, and we're from the northern part.
And wanted to marry their sister.
We've got records from when our Wright ancestor from Antrim County, County Antrim, I should say, Northern Ireland, came over and settled in Tennessee. He had to take an oath and everything, naturalized citizen. He did it in 1812 because of the war.
So what were you rights of? Because right is a generic... There are a lot of things that one would be a right of.
Well, in terms of my understanding is that if someone's name is just right, there's a possibility, of course, they were some other kind of right and it got shortened.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a possibility that it's kind of like Smith is that way, because Smith is sometimes at, like, blacksmith or whatever.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
There's also a possibility that a sort of a generic, it was a label for particularly people who worked on windmills and watermills and the like.
Really?
Specifically because they were dealing with the mechanical aspects. So it was kind of a generic term for, like, an engineer.
I was going to say, to me it sounds like technician or something.
Yeah, yeah, something like that.
Like, it sort of means something, but at the same time it could mean a whole lot of different things.
Right, right. But it's hard to say. But being an occupation name, obviously there's a lot of people with that name to whom I'm not particularly related, any more than you would be related to them in England. And I usually, when I run into a Wright, they know, oh yeah, we're related to these Wrights from such and such a place, and I know I'm not related to them. And I've not run into very many Wrights who are related to us from Northern
also
Ireland.
I've found a lot of people are wrong about that stuff.
That's true. I mean,
but I've also found that since it doesn't really matter, I usually play along. Oh my God, you're direct descendant of Abraham Lincoln.
Well, that's so awesome. And people like to be related to the Wright brothers.
Of course.
But, you know, we're not... My Wrights came over in 1801. We think it might have been related to some of the political turmoil in Northern Ireland at the time. We don't know that for a fact, but there's some evidence to suggest that. But they weren't naturalized citizens until 1812, because the war broke out and, you know, the government went through and they were looking for British citizens who they were afraid might become traitors or whatever, interviewed them, talked to them, so, you know, asked about how long they'd been in the country, and so on.
Do you plan to visit a farm?
And then they got a loyalty oath, basically, from these people. Mm. And that was that. And my ancestor was a shoemaker at that time. Apparently, the records say he was.
Was a terrible last name.
Shoemaker. I guess so. I know where he lived. He lived on a farm. I mean, I've been there, and I even talked to the people who work there now. And there was a tobacco shed there, so it looked like, you know, the people used to grow tobacco there. And I asked the guy, "Is this very good farming here?" He said, "Oh no, not at all." So my ancestor must have been doing shoemaking,
shoes.
Supplement his meager agricultural income.
Have I made you watch the Cracked video about the invention of last names?
No.
Then I know what we're watching in between episodes.
I don't think I've seen that one.
They don't do them very much anymore, but they have a whole series of basically things that must have happened in history to get to certain points. And actually, they've done some fictitious ones. They had one that was a great version, I may have made you watch that, of the first Hunger Games.
No.
Yeah, and like all the stuff they got wrong the first time. I think probably the best is one that basically establishes how the Pope got his like crazy outfit and everything. Oh. And, there's convincing the last guy who's not Hitler to get rid of his Hitler mustache and stuff like that. But yeah, there's one on when they finally decided they needed last names. I'll show you that. So just the other day on the not always sites, you know, there's notalwaysright.com. That's about customer service. I've talked about that before. They have a whole bunch of different ones. And on one of them, I don't remember which, it was a thing talking about this group of, like, teenage girls, I think, who were having a sleepover, and the next morning, for whatever reason, they decided to watch Sesame Street, which none of them had seen in, like, years and years and years.
Sure.
And they're all talking about who their favorite characters are.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them says, "My favorite is definitely Big Bert."
Big Bert?
That's what they said. "Wait, do you mean Bert? Or Big Bird?" And she's like, "No, Big Bird. There's like Bert who goes with Ernie, and then there's Big Bird." That's how they tell him. And everybody's like, "No, it's Big Bird." And she's like, "That's stupid. That's like if I called you Blonde Woman. You wouldn't call a Big Bird Big Bird." And what they eventually did is they found their old Sesame Street book or whatever so that they could see it printed before she actually believed them. Which is funny, but also, Big Bird's name is Big Bird.
Yeah.
That's a little weird and alienating, I feel. That's a little odd.
Like if someone called you Big Man?
Yeah, like that's not a name.
No.
That's an incredibly rough description. That is an animal type and a general size. Like, that's really cold when you think about it. Why is Big Bird just called Big? I mean,
some years ago, I attended.
Oh, look, that's small camel. That would not what you'd call your friend.
No, I attended a puppeteering convention.
I am unsurprised.
We worked together at the time, but
still pretty unsurprised.
One of our coworkers, you might be able to figure out who it was. When they knew I was going to this, they said, "If you see Big Bird down there," which I might have had some reason to think I was going to, like I knew ahead of time that some Jim Henson thing was going to be there.
Yeah.
She said, give me one of his feathers.
Okay.
I said, "Oh, well, sounds like a tall order, but I'll try."
And see, okay, just would like to pause for a second to say, I don't know who this is, because my first guess got negated when you said she, and my second guess would be not correct because you probably wouldn't talk about your wife as somebody we used to work with.
No.
And those are my top two guesses, right?
Well,
there.
Anyway, maybe I can tell you later.
It was Jeff was the other one. Jeff, and then.
Anyhow, we got down there, and sure enough, there was a place where they had some Jim Henson stuff, and they had Big Bird, like the costume, but it was set up so it was standing there, you know. And one of the feathers had dropped off and was right outside the display. I could just pick it up and put it in my wallet. And I gave it to her when I got back. And I had no idea. I mean, when she first asked me to do this, I thought, well, that's how. I don't even know if any Big Bird stuff's going to be there, if Big Bird's going to be there, anything. But as it happened, there was one of the Big Bird costumes stood up as a display. And some of the feathers had fallen off and were right there on the floor.
Shit, now I believe in God again. Don't ask me why, because I honestly don't know, but that reminds me of something important we have to cover. But first, we should probably talk about what this show is. Here's the show, for those of you who are brand new. We have a hat. It is magical, in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People, not unlike yourselves, mostly this one woman named Coffee, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, little comments, questions, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its erstwhile servants, draw those cards out at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show. And tonight, we're going to have to do that for about an hour and then get that processed and then do it for another hour because I will be traveling for the holiday next Thursday.
What's erstwhile mean? Doesn't it mean like...
I think it just means while, pretty much.
I thought it meant like former.
Okay, Google. What does erstwhile mean? I love this thing.
Does it work?
Quite a lot. All right now, though. Oh, wait, here we go. What does erstwhile mean? Erstwhile, former, or as an adverb, formerly. All right, I should stop using that then.
Probably, because we're still at servants.
Yeah, that seems inappropriate. All right, I don't believe it.
It seems like there's some other word that you and I are both thinking of that should go there that's not that word. What is it? Is there another word and we're just...
Ersatz.
No. I think I have a sense of what, because you've used it before, and I didn't even think anything about it. But you said it this time. I thought, now wait a minute.
Ecclesiastical.
I think we need to look at that word because that might not mean what. But I think there's a word in our heads that we're forgetting that also starts with E, though. But I don't know what it is.
No, I'm confident all the words in my head that start with E, I remember.
Anyway, what is it we needed to discuss? You said
that. No, we had to get to.
Oh, what do we have to get to?
Merry Christmas! I'm not rapping it because that's how I roll. I don't do that shit. Please tell me you haven't read it.
I've never even seen this before.
Good. It's nonfiction, so you have no excuse. Will you tell people what it
is? Oh, you know what? I have heard of it.
Okay, but you haven't read it.
No, this is Jill Lepore, I think it's Lepore, I think is how she pronounces her name, her Secret History of Wonder Woman. I did hear about it because it made the news, you know, and people were talking quite a bit about it.
I ran into it on an AV club thing, and the way they described it, it sounds fascinating and also sort of off edge from what I know, and because at this point I'm like, I wouldn't get you books about the history of superheroes in general, because, like, you know it all.
Well, I know some of it, yeah.
But this one seemed to really be talking about, like, intersections with the culture at the time and the ramifications
therein. Yeah, looking through it, when I heard about it, like I said, it made some press, it was on the radio, it was various things talking about it. But of course, all of those reports talked about, oh, it was the guy who invented invented the lie detector, and then bondage and stuff, and oh, and yeah. His mother-in-law was this stuff that I already knew. And I thought, well, you know, I guess this is a surprise to some people, but not to me. But looking at, this is a thick book.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of, you know, it's 400 some pages, and I'm looking through and I'm seeing a lot of things that nobody talked about in the news reports about what kind of information that it contains, and this is amazing.
There was a lot of stuff that surprised me, and just reading the description and saw it, I was like, that, like, I instantly was like, that's gonna be, I think your wife will love it too, but.
No, yeah.
As soon as I saw that.
Thank you very much. I cannot believe this stuff is in here. How come when people talked about it in blog posts and the radio and stuff, they didn't mention any of this other stuff.
They never actually looked at it. They guessed.
Oh, wow. This is going to be very interesting.
The way news works nowadays, some guy, and I say guy, definitely guy, thumbed through it in the bookstore, tweeted about it, and that was the source of all of the news things.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I am going to enjoy this a lot.
So how's your week been?
Oh, let's see. It's been good. You know, we've been watching, speaking of Wonder Woman, because of the World War I setting that the film's going to be in, my wife started to feel like she needed to sort of...
play some Battlefield 1?
No, just catch up on, you know, there's just some things she didn't remember about when she learned about World War I when she was in junior high or whatever. So there's a YouTube channel called The Great War, and it started, the YouTube channel started producing content on the anniversary of the beginning of World War I, and the idea is that every Thursday, I guess, every week, they're going to cover a different week in the war, you know, clear up until 2018 when they'll finish. And they don't just put things out on Thursdays, though. They've got extra things, like they'll focus on a particular character, like they did the Red Baron for one, you know, 6 or 7 minute thing. Or they'll talk about some other, or they'll answer questions. People can ask questions in the comments, and they'll have a special segment just answering those questions. So, you know, at this point, of course, they're not all the way through the war yet, because it's only the end of 1916 in their show. But they've got, like, over 300 videos, and like I say, they're 6-7 minutes long. You know how YouTube videos are. But we just kind of sort of started watching them. I think we've watched maybe 100 of them by now. But they're very interesting. It's, you know, when you've got about 7 minutes to cover a week, that's just about right. I mean, you can get some pretty good detail in there. Not real minutia, but, you know, you can cover where the fronts are, who's doing what. And it's really, really fascinating, and we're both really enjoying it. I mean, it might be tedious for some people, but it's something that, you know, maybe, you know, shows are in hiatus now, and we get discs from Netflix still, but sometimes we don't have those, and so, like, hey, let's watch this for an hour or two, and it's very, very interesting. It's pretty well done.
I feel like Trish and I should start doing that more, because we have access to YouTube on the TV via the PS4.
Yeah, that's how we watch it too.
To do, but yep. Yeah, we don't. We will watch individual things if, like, we hear about them. Have you watched today's Just Between Us?
Yes.
I was expecting a sequel to Mondays.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess they do that. The last time they had a two-part, they waited until it was... because they specifically have Monday stuff and Thursday stuff. But Monday's thing seemed really Thursday.
Yeah.
I'm very curious what that's going to finish like.
Yeah, I don't know.
Today's was okay.
Today's was one of those where I watched and I thought, this is... you and I might have made something like this if we were doing
absolutely,
as a team.
Absolutely.
I thought that was... so every once, not all of them are like that, but no. Every once in a while I see one and I think, yeah, this is what... Tony and I would have done this.
Yeah.
And I was impressed that Gabby wrote it, because...
see, I was going to ask. I wasn't sure on this one, but I feel like you're the expert on who wrote which one.
So. Like I've said before, when they were first starting out, I felt like all of Allison's were really well-written, very strong. And Gabby's were good, but you could tell it wasn't, you know...
not as tight.
Yeah. But the last ones that she's been doing, I've watched and I've thought, oh, there's something about this that seems like it's Gabby's kind of thing, but it's so well done, I would almost guess it was Allison. So I actually had to look.
I feel like they're both right now... I mean, obviously I don't know what's going on, but I feel like there's a lot of change happening for them right now in general.
Just like in their personal lives, you mean?
Yeah, and just in terms of their growth as writers and performers and things like that. I'm noticing an evolution to them right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know
well,
some...
well, and that, again, that thing Monday, besides leaving me in suspense, was beautifully done.
Hmm. Well, and Allison wrote and directed that. So, I know a lot of people recently have felt like that their material just kind of seems to be rehashing the same old thing. But as a writer myself, yeah, but as a writer myself, I their scripted content always seems, you know, even if it seems repetitive to people, it's still very, like you say, tight.
Yeah,
it's very,
and they've even said before, like, people love their Thursday stuff. It's
yeah,
the Monday
it's,
stuff.
It's there. Very well edited. It's very well shot.
For those
shot,
of you who haven't been
it's
as
just
deep
very good
in
stuff.
The weeds with us as we are here, we're talking about a YouTube channel called Just Between Us. We would recommend you check it out.
Sure. It's really good. We're continuing to watch The Good Wife, which I'm starting to believe is a real, I'm like, one of the better television shows I've ever
they
seen.
They really are doing Christine Baranski's spinoff, but it's going to be on some streaming thing. Maybe the CBS one, so you can watch it and Star Trek.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll do that. I mean, maybe we will. I don't know.
I don't watch enough CBS to warrant an entire purchase of...
But I don't think we do either. I mean...
I don't feel like most people do. I feel like it's a bad idea on their part, but...
But why are they doing it?
Because they want to make money.
Right, but...
Now, don't get me wrong. It's not that these shows would be on the air if they didn't have the streaming channel. These shows just wouldn't happen at all. But the question is, why are they doing this as opposed to giving it over to Hulu or something like that?
Mm.
And that, I believe, is they want to make money and think that they will. Which maybe they will, you know. Old people love CBS. Maybe they'll all pay. I don't think it's a huge amount.
That's kind of surprising. I hear people say that all the time about CBS, but... But
well, it's a holdover from the 80s and 90s. Who knows now?
Sure, but watching The Good Wife, there's a lot of stuff in there that I would, you know, most of the older people I know wouldn't like it.
Old people love Law & Order SVU, so you never can tell.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Everybody loves Law & Order SVU except me and smart people. I'm saying if you watch Law & Order SVU, you're dumb. I'm saying it now. Live with it. William still likes you.
I do still like you. But yeah, we haven't really... We're kind of looking forward to Rogue One, but I'm not sure when we're going to see it. Maybe we'll see it this
we're
weekend. I don't
know. Tomorrow.
Are you?
Our company does a thing where you get time off for Christmas. Like they used to do it the day of the Christmas party. Then like it would end at like 2 or 3, and then they would just send us home. But... That meant having the Christmas party really early in the day, and it got kind of weird. So now they do the Christmas party on Thursday. They did it this today. We were at it. Sorry, the winter mix and jingle. But yeah, the Christmas party. The holiday party. And then tomorrow we have what they call the gift of time, where we get some extra time off at the end of our day. And so Trish and I are going to go and see Rogue One. She already bought the tickets online like a week ago or something.
Wow.
She really likes the opening day thing, if it's a movie that we know we're going to see, because, like, there's no way we would not go see it. So she's like, as long as we're doing it, let's, you know, do it. And I'm like, okay, whatever. I love you, so we'll do that. But.
Well, yeah, I don't know when we're going to see it. We probably will. The critics seem to be, you know, think it's good.
Everybody who's seen it so far seems to think it's good. AV Club gave it a B, which is not spectacular, but for them, it's pretty high. Like, for not being an art house indie film, that's a pretty high mark.
I know a lot of critics like that, where it's got to be some kind of artsy-fartsy thing to get an A, and if it gets a
and
B...
And don't get me wrong, I don't ever disagree with... It's the lettering that gets weird. Like, when you read the reviews, they all make sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But then there are times when it's like,
I know.
And it's usually the high end. Like, what's the difference between an A and a B plus?
Yeah.
Versus what's the difference, well, as somebody said, the F or the D minus the gentleman's F, as it was referred at one point.
I know some critics that would never, if they use a letter scale, they would never give a comedy higher than a C.
But
when they give a comedy a C plus, it's actually, they think it's good and they think you'll think it's good. But that's just out of principle, they just won't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're going to go see that tomorrow, so that should be fun, because it looks like it's going to be
well, hopefully
cool.
I'll see it before I see you again, but, I mean, that's going to be two or three, what is it?
I forget who it was,
2 weeks.
Somebody, probably Will Wheaton. Somebody said that they haven't enjoyed a Star Wars movie so much since 1977.
No kidding.
Well, apparently, it feels like, as much as is possible, this will be the first one, basically since Empire, that's kind of done something different.
Hmm.
Okay, except for the prequels, which is some terribly different. Because it's really, it feels like it's apparently really dark, not particularly religious, essentially. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of the force bullshit in there so much. And so, yeah. But we'll see. I'll know more soon. Ow, 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 ow.
Why is she doing that?
I don't know. I think she thinks this is fun. I don't think she's mad at me or anything. I think she's playing around. But it's unusual for her. Sorry. Ezzy was grabbing my foot and rabbit kicking it and chewing on my toe. Okay, so what about the rest of your week?
That's pretty much it, I think. What about you?
I finished Assassin's Creed Unity.
Are you looking forward to the movie?
I'm looking forward to the movie a great deal. I have too much hope. I probably should not. But the biggest screw-up that they could have done, they didn't do, which is that it's about a character and an ancestor, both that aren't in any of the video games.
And that's good?
Yes. Because they've told those stories in the video games, and when a movie tries to tell the story of a video game, the fuck-up ratio is really high.
Mm.
So, although there are certain things I can already tell that are different from the video game, that are very visual things. They're machines, very different setup. But there's not going to be a, oh no, in the story they made this character too much of an asshole or whatever, because these are original characters to the movie. So, I think
that's probably a smart move.
Good, yeah, so I am kind of excited about that. However, Assassin's Creed Unity, worst story of the series so far for me. I haven't played Syndicate, but the story sucked.
Really?
Really a lot. There was no payoff. Not only was a lot of the stuff, I don't want to spoil things for the series, but there's reasons why people in the modern day are interested in very specific things that were happening in history because of some weird sci-fi related stuff. That was almost not in this. Like, the story had very little to do with that. There were some huge things that were in this one that, had they been in an earlier one, would have been the entire point of the story that we didn't even talk about. Like, it's... Okay, here, I'll put it this way. Imagine that you had a Star Wars movie that had nothing to do with the main stories at all and had zero Jedi or Sith in it, but some dude just had a lightsaber and nobody even asked him what it was or where he got it, ever. It's like that.
Okay.
And the primary story, consequently, is mostly built around this romance that, honestly, I think they did poorly on. Mm. They've done good romance, but so, yeah. The story was shit. It was still a fun game. Wandering around Revolution-era Paris is pretty fun.
Yeah.
So that's good. But now, apparently, I just recently read a thing. So, this game and the next one, it sounds like, don't spend a lot of time with the overarching plot set in the modern day that the series has been doing. And apparently this is deliberate. The video games just aren't really going to deal with that story anymore. Instead, they're releasing a series of comics that's going to do it.
Hmm.
I'm kind of annoyed by this.
Well, why have that in the first place? I mean, when we haven't played it, but when we had kids living at home, one of the boys tried to play it, and I watched, and I couldn't even figure out why that aspect. Why not just make it about these people that live in this time period? Why have the modern day...
Well, for me, the modern day story is the story I care about.
Really?
Absolutely. I am obsessed with that story.
Huh. Okay.
I love that story.
I couldn't figure out what the point of it was.
I frequently will finish a game I haven't done this time, and I immediately go to all the wikis and try and like tie it into other stuff, but I have to be really careful not to spoil it for me for the future stuff.
Yeah.
No, I find it a very cool story. It's a very conspiracy theory-ish. It's got some cool sci-fi in it. Yeah, it's
okay.
But I and a lot of friends of mine, actually, may be in the minority, which may be why they are now planning this sort of switch over. Yeah, and in this one, like, it was still tied in a little bit. Like, that stuff still happened, but doesn't tie into the overall story, really, at all. So, that was sad. And I watched some movies. I watched several interesting movies.
Yeah?
Yes, I have to talk about them. I watched three movies, all of which are ostensibly horror movies. I'm not sure all of them qualify, but there was a movie from 1998 called The Killer Eye.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recommend it. It is it falls into a growing genre I have invented that I still haven't come up with a name for, that are movies that were created because someone working in the softcore porn industry felt that they really could break into mainstream cinema but had no money, and so they convinced all their friends who also work with them, the actors, the crew, the set designers, the costumers, to spend their weekend when they're not making softcore porn trying to make a real movie.
Hmm.
There's a lot of these. It just looks like softcore porn people trying to really act. And just like impossibly buff guys for no reason, and a lot of bleach blonde hair, and a lot of sets that are clearly just some rich person's house in LA. But then they try and do a story. It's very odd. Like, there's a lot of these. I don't know what to call that genre yet, but there's really a lot of these movies. Mm. So yeah, it's terrible. Don't bother with that one. There was a movie called Judas Ghost, which was not bad. If you want to see a good ghost hunting movie, it's not bad. The most interesting thing about that one is I learned what a Judas goat is.
A what?
Judas goat.
I don't know what that is.
Neither did I. In fact, in the movie, they were trying to get this ghost to say what it was, and it said it was a Judas ghost. And the guy said, oh, I get that, like a Judas goat. And everyone in the room said, a what? And he explained it, and it sounded super made up, so I looked it up, real thing. A Judas goat is a goat. It is some type of herd animal, most commonly a goat, but it could be a steer and cattle or something.
I think
like that.
I do know
and
what this is.
You gotta get to
food. I think I might know what this is.
Don't spoil it. We're keeping everybody with the anticipation here. Trish, food's here. Yeah, it is a goat that has been trained specifically to lead the herd somewhere specific.
That's right.
The most common version of this is a goat that has been trained to lead a herd to the slaughterhouse.
Right, right.
And then that goat doesn't get slaughtered, because then you can use it next time to help lead the herd.
That's right.
I found this very interesting. I also found it interesting because, like I said, in the movie, the Judas ghost does nothing like that ever.
Okay.
So I feel like somebody just heard that term and were like, dude, what if instead of a Judas goat, it was a Judas ghost, and then made a movie that had nothing to do with that. But it's still kind of an interesting movie. I sort of recommend it, but you can live without it. Then we got the third one, The Devil's Chair. I highly recommend this movie to an incredibly small number of people.
Okay.
This movie is really horrific. This movie is a movie with tons of blood and gore. Lots of freaky, scary stuff. A fair number of jump scares. Not a ton, but some. And just fucked up. And it doesn't start that way. It starts off fairly formulaic. But watchable. And that's fine. And then at a certain point, things just really got messed up. And then got worse from there. If you are easily offended, this is a terrible movie for you. There's all sorts of problematic things in it that are pointless to worry about because it's a really fucked up horror movie. But for people who occasionally want that, and I'm one of those, every once in a while I'm like, I want to see something that's really horrific. Because I don't normally watch horror movies for that. I watch horror movies to laugh at them. Or occasionally for the eerie atmosphere. But to watch what, like, this is meant to just fuck with your head. This Rob Zombie wishes he could make this movie, in my opinion. Then check it out, The Devil's Chair. It is an impressive movie.
Did you ever watch The Strain?
The Strain. No. That was one that I was not interested in until it was far enough along that I sort of didn't get back to it. Because, yeah, at first it didn't really appeal to me, but then now I see the commercials and I'm like, oh, shit. This looks awesome.
I thought the first season was really good. It clearly had nods to Bram Stoker and to Nosferatu.
Well, it was just Guillermo del Toro's baby, so it had all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, it was... it was really interesting. The second season wasn't quite as strong, but I think what happened there was... Okay, so, you know, he wanted to make this TV show, but mm-hmm. couldn't find a way to do it, so he did the graphic novels.
Oh.
And they were popular, so then he got to do the TV show.
Okay, I guess I didn't know there was
right.
an earlier
so,
material.
So, season one is supposed to be based on like, there's three volumes, I guess, to the story, and mm-hmm. season one is supposed to be sort of based on volume one. And then there was a lot of talk about, okay, well, we'll have five seasons total or whatever, because we'll take the last two volumes and we'll split them in two. Okay. Well, I don't think that worked out very well. Season two was okay, but it wasn't nearly as good as season one, and I think after season two was over, they thought, maybe we don't really have to split them up like that. So I think there's only going to be four seasons total, and hopefully, I mean, the third season's already been, and I haven't seen it, because I've been watching them on DVD. But is that... I think it's pretty good.
I'm surprised, because I don't normally think of that. I mean, you tend not to like horror, and it's definitely horror.
But it's very much gothic horror. I mean, like I said, season one was like, you basically take Bram Stoker's story, and then some of the changes that were added with Nosferatu, but you make it modern. Mm-hmm. And you put all the characters in there. You don't give them the same names or anything like that. But if you like, you know, if you like Bram Stoker's Dracula and you like Nosferatu, and you can tolerate a Del Toro weirdness, or if you like it, and I sometimes like it, but a lot of times I just sort of have to tolerate it because I don't really like it, but it's not terrible or whatever. But anyway, if you like those things, then season one is just going to be awesome to you, and it was to me. The second season was not quite right for some reason. I'm not quite sure, but the first season was great. But I mean, you know, there is, I guess it is gory in some places or whatever, but it's mostly, you know, creepy, and it gets back to that kind of vampire that's...
Yeah, it's definitely not the...
A monster.
Modern, sexy vampire.
No, none of that stuff.
Yeah.
You really get the sense of the vampire stories that, like, Bram Stoker told. And even though, you know, one of the earliest modern vampire novels was about a vampire that could pass himself off as a nobleman or whatever and mm-hmm. seduce women or whatever, the tone of those, like, and Carmilla was a beautiful young woman or whatever, and she seduced another woman. And people make a big deal out of all the sexual aspects of those stories, but when I read them, to me, that was so totally downplayed, and you still got the same sense as in Bram Stoker's novel, which was the how monstrous the creature was. Mm-hmm. The whole aspect of them being able to pass for a in fact, the vampire, the one that had the guy that could pass as a nobleman and seduce women, as I recall, the description of his appearance wasn't that flattering. Mm-hmm. The way he endeared himself to women was just by being a gentleman. And like women of a lower reputation would, you know, come on to him, and he wouldn't have anything to do with women like that. He was only interested in women who were, you know, chaste and were only interested in sleeping with a man after they were married and stuff like that. So all of the sexual stuff was kind of, it was actually creepier that way, that this guy was acting like he was so moral, and he had admired other moral women, and then on the wedding night he would kill them. And I even got the impression that he didn't sleep with them and kill them. He just got them alone in the bedchamber, which is the first time he could for such a woman with such high morals, and killed her. So the whole thing for me is, when I'm reading the old stories, I don't really get all of that sensuality so much in it at all. To me, that seems more of a modern thing. So watching The Strain, and it kind of goes back to them being monsters again, and it being really creepy, I actually appreciate it a lot. I don't know if you'd be into it for that reason or not. Because I don't know what your attraction to vampires
is. No, I totally love sexy vampires. Okay, but I also like monstrous vampires.
Okay, okay.
But no, I love sexy vampires. I think vampires are about sex and death. And those are the two ways that you can...
See, I think vampires are about deception and consumption. That's what I think. I think while a lot of modern vampire stories want to equate vampirism with, like, addiction, probably along the lines of what you're talking about, I prefer a story that compares vampires to, like, you know, corporate greed or you know, the exploitation of the masses by the 1%, that kind of thing. Because that's the sense I get from the older literature, and you kind of get that sense a little bit from The Strain. So that I prefer that, and so I've been enjoying it quite a bit, and hopefully we'll be able to watch the third season soon. The first season was really good, I thought. Mm-hmm. Second season, I don't know, maybe you'll like it, but
we'll see. I doubt I'll get to it anytime soon. Although stuff is leaving it. Supposedly, there's rumors that this season of Elementary is going to be the last one.
Really?
Which I'm sad about, but I'm also glad about, because it's the fifth one. It's time. I don't ever think a show should go over five seasons.
I feel that way too, really.
Because then you can end it well.
Yeah.
Leverage ended well. You know, Babylon 5 had issues. But if it had gone as planned, ended well. You know, if it ended this season, unless they do some really crazy shit, this will end well. When you go beyond that, X-Files, Castle, any real successful sitcom, you get to a point where it sucks, and you could enjoy it by only watching earlier. But I love for stuff to not go out sucking.
Well, yeah, Star Trek.
Next Generation.
Yeah, they're kind of that way. Where, like, I think Voyager and Next Generation both ended at 7, but they probably could have better ended at 5 or 6.
Yeah. Just in general, I feel like. Unless it's really bad, it's good if you can give something at least 3 seasons. But I don't think you should give it more than 5.
Yeah, well, because of 3 seasons, you can do sort of a 3-act structure in season size.
Yeah. Or from a purely qualitative standpoint, and this was much more true back in the day, you get a season to find your feet.
Sure.
You get a season to make people really care, and then you get a season that's all spectacle.
Although I have to say, along with the trend of like releasing the entire season on, you know, on the first day,
yeah,
I like that. Not so much. Part of it is I do like to binge watch. I mean, like a lot of people do, but it's not just that. I like that they had to think about the whole season when they put it all together.
Yes.
I think that makes it better.
Yes.
But along with that, a short 10 episode season, that's, or even, you know,
6, 8, 13 10.
On the outside,
yeah.
That seems better than 22 or 24.
Which, by the
show
way,
season.
And full disclosure, I haven't seen it since 98. But there's a British show, it only had 1 8 episode series called Ultraviolet, not to be confused with the later Mila Jovovich movie that sucks so bad. Not to be confused with that. But it also involves vampires. You should check it out. I think I saw it recently on either Amazon or Netflix or something, but I think you would like it.
It is
a vampire hunting show. But it's very much the secret organization that does it, and like and it's much more about, I think it's more in that vein. That there's not a lot about vampires being sexy in this.
Yeah, I was. We also finished Van Helsing, and finally they explained why the show was called.
Hey,
in the very last episode of the season, they explained why the show was called that. Because, you know, I was thinking up until that point, I think that we've actually heard the last name of this main character, and it was not Helsing or Van Helsing. I think we've even heard her last name, and. But I couldn't remember. But then they mentioned it later. That's exactly the name. They said her name was Vanessa. Now I don't remember. Vanessa something.
Yeah.
But it was not Helsing or Van Helsing. So not only did they not bring up that name early in the show, but they did mention what her last name was, and it wasn't that.
Which means the whole thing was incredibly deliberate, which
yeah.
is weird.
Yeah, but anyway. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they wanted it to be a reveal, but you named the show this.
Actually, what do you want to bet? Somebody made the show, wanted it to be a reveal, didn't name the show.
Yeah, maybe. That might
studio
be.
Studio execs that might were be. Like, no.
That might be.
You won't get any draw if it's just some general monster hunting show.
But what I wanted to do, after watching all these things, what I wanted to do was, I want to make a story where somehow a regular person realizes that there are vampires in like all levels of government, corporations or whatever. And the reason that they've infiltrated human government and corporations, there's a reason though, because this is how they manage their food supply.
Mm.
And
I think that actually has been done.
Right, but there's a conflict between these vampires and other vampires, because there are some vampires that want to treat the humans as a food supply, like we treat cattle and like have confinement and stuff like that. Do it like that. Yeah. But the other vampires are like, you know, we think of humans as food, but we like you, you know, like humans have pets and humans think cows are fun or cute or whatever, even though they still eat them. Well, that's how we feel about humans. We like you and we want to be humane towards you, but these other vampires just want to put you in big confinement.
This is not dissimilar from the red and white vampire courts in Dresden, actually.
Oh, really? Okay. That's interesting.
So, it's not quite to that extreme, but yeah, that's
the kind of story
that. Well, and it made it look like, because they specifically refer to them using the terms you use for cattle. Like, they refer to humans that way.
Well, yeah. Well, actually
I don't even think it's deer. I think it's deer, because they call them kine as a group, and they call males bucks and females does.
Oh, okay. Well, in the story, though, that I don't know what I would have the vampires look like, but I think they just look like regular people, not particularly good-looking, bad-looking, whatever. But it's going to be impossible for any of them not to think of a human being as, food or whatever. I mean, they can have a friendship with another human being, but it's like you having a friendship with your cats or whatever. It's like, okay, I can talk to you and I can have a relationship with you, but you are still food.
I'm totally planning to eat my cat. We need to pull something out of the hat or people are going to protest.
All right, sorry.
Because we got like 8 minutes left or something.
What? Well, look who's here.
Could it be coffee by chance?
Nope.
Oh my goodness.
It's brand new American stew.
Oh.
You thought fancy. I was talking about food. Okay, here we go. What can a...
giving him American lessons.
What can a progressive do to avoid an existential crisis in our current political climate?
A progressive can save up to 15% on their car insurance. No, wait, or is that a Geico? I don't remember. Read that to me again.
What can a progressive do to avoid an existential crisis in our current political climate? Now, for some of our listeners who aren't all that familiar with how American politics work, progressive, tricky term really, but
really is.
But in this context, I'm pretty sure it means a person who is, they might say they're socially progressive, and that means their political affiliation is generally on the left, liberal, they're going to be pro, gay rights, they're going to be pro civil rights, women's rights, right? They're probably going to support programs that are compassionate toward poor people. And to pay for such programs, they're probably going to be okay giving a little bit of more of a tax burden to rich people, who presumably wouldn't miss it, and that kind of thing.
That doesn't sound like Stu. Stu's a jackass.
Well, and the reason there's confusion is because progressive, the beginning of progressive politics in the United States sort of included that kind of stuff in a way, because, for example, Abraham Lincoln was called a progressive, and people, Republicans who followed in his footsteps were called progressives because, they were against slavery, they had some civil rights interests. Progressive Republicans like Theodore Roosevelt were anti-big business, and they were trust busters and the like. But all of that progressive labeling kind of applied to people who were called Republicans and who in some ways would still even be considered conservative by today's standards. But progressive has kind of come to mean
also
liberal.
I believe one of the European fascist regimes used that term. Maybe the Nazis. Somebody, if you go back far enough, progressive means the opposite of that.
Right. But so what Stu's really asking is if you're a liberal person, and
if you're seriously pissed off that Trump got elected,
and the alt-right seems to be more vocal and getting a lot of attention in the press, how can you avoid an existential crisis? Well, I mean, I think it's just a matter of perspective. You know, you just have to. There are certain things that our current situation is that you have to deal with because that's the way they are. But there are certain things that also is not. And there's, if you remember that, you know, for example, Donald Trump has been elected president. You know, we do have a tricameral set up in our government. There's checks and balances. You know, there's really only so much that he's going to be able to do on a practical level in terms of governance. So that's something to keep in mind. I would keep in mind that the alt-right, though getting a lot of attention right now, is still a relatively small group of people, and that on the bright side of all this stuff going on, a lot of people who previously weren't particularly politically motivated are feeling like they should become so. And so a lot of people
have to change citizenship.
Yeah, right. There's a lot of people. Well, you for example, are probably a little more activist minded now than you were before.
Absolutely.
And so that's a silver lining to all of this. It's true that the Republicans control Congress, but they're not all in the same vein as Trump, and they don't all support Trump. So for me, there's a lot of things to notice and to think about that will help give a little perspective that will prevent one from going into complete existential, you know, meltdown. But it is discouraging. It is disappointing. And I think we should allow ourselves to be discouraged and disappointed by this development because that's just how it is. That's what it is. But we shouldn't allow ourselves to sink into absolute despair because it's not the end of the world. There are things that we can do that we've always been able to do and that we should have probably all been doing anyway. And, you know, that's going to make the next 4 years go a lot easier and also make sure that it's, you know, only 4 years. And that's assuming that the Electoral College doesn't do something revolutionary in the next few days, but we'll see.
Yes, assuming that.
You're skeptical, I can see that.
Of the Hamilton electors? Absolutely, that's never going to happen. But I also said Donald Trump would never be president, so what the fuck do I know? And let's see, that's the weird thing. Then if they pull it off, then I'm wrong about them, but I was right about Donald Trump never being president. Oh my God, it's like a paradox. No, I have an answer. I just have an answer that's very different from yours.
Oh, okay.
What can you do as a progressive to prevent an existential crisis? I don't think you can do... Well, okay, there is something you can do. Give up.
Well, that...
Fuck it.
That is something you can do.
That will probably prevent an existential crisis, because you'll just stop thinking about this stuff. But that's the only way I know of, and more specifically, I don't think you should prevent an existential crisis. I think you should have an existential crisis. I know I did, and still am processing through it. This happened, people. We did not expect this to happen. This was a big deal, and it happened. We need to start figuring out why and what this means. We need to look at what we thought the country looked like and what we think the country looks like now. We need to look at where we're getting our sources of information and how believable they are and how accurate they depict the demographics of the nation. We need to look at what we believe and who we've been supporting, and if those things agree, we need to look at what is most important to us and how we personally can act to deal with that. We need to reevaluate both ourselves and our nation and our place in this nation. And it sucks, and it's going to take a long time, and it's going to be hard, but each and every one of us needs to be doing that.
Yeah, I agree with all that. What another thing I think we can both agree on is the temptation that a lot of people seem to be under and seem to be caving into is this temptation to normalize this somehow, and I really, really wish, I would really advise people not to do that.
Yeah, we need to stop making so many jokes. Because this is some serious shit. I mean, we make jokes to try and survive. I have started, you know, I've talked about being really vigilant. I've discovered I can't do that 7 days a week. So there are days, frequently on the weekend, where I'm like, you know what? Not going to keep up on current events today. I need a break.
Sure, I think
so. And then Monday, I look at it again and want to slit my wrists and whatever, but I'm like, I originally was every day checking Twitter, checking the news feeds, all the stuff, seeing what people are talking about. What does it mean? What do I think it means? What is, you know? And I'm like, I can't. Hopefully, it's going to slow down anyway a little bit, but I can't be doing this 7 days a week. Yeah,
you really need to take a break at least once.
But I'm
week.
Not going to stop either. So yeah, you got to measure it out. But
it's not normal. And it's not.
It's not normal. It's not okay.
It's not okay.
It's not going to be okay 4 years from now either.
Nope.
And that's the important thing. It's really easy for us to get comfortable.
I think that would be a big mistake. I think it. I think getting comfortable is why we're part of why we're here.
Agreed.
So yeah, But I do. An existential crisis to me is like. I don't think a person has to feel like the world is ending or their life is ending. But a sense of urgency, however, like all the things that you were just talking about, yes, definitely.
I call it an existential crisis for me because I'm genuinely looking at myself and what kind of a person I am, what kind of a person I was under the impression I was, and what kind of person I want to be. And those three are not necessarily connected.
Well, those are all good things to think about regardless of who gets elected into office, I suppose.
Yeah, this was just a big wake-up call. Yeah, it would have been nice if I just did that casually somewhere in the last 8 years. But what I'm saying is, and those of you who have already been doing it, if you really have, which I still think is probably a small number, just keep it up. That's awesome. But for the rest of us, which I think is the bulk of us, we haven't been, and this should shake us up into doing it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been a pretty active person for my whole adult life in terms of politics, but I also didn't see this coming. I talked to people though. I mean, I talked to people who were Republicans who didn't like Trump, and I really got the impression they were not going to show up to vote for him. And I talked to Democrats who didn't like Hillary. But I really got the impression they were going to show up to vote for her. So, I mean, that's part of the reason I was pretty confident was because I was pretty sure my Republican friends who were sad that Trump got the nomination were not going to show up. And my Democrat friends who were sad that Hillary got the nomination were going to show up anyway because they were trying to stop Trump. And kind of the exact opposite thing happened. So
well, because a lot of people aren't your friends.
Well, what I think it is that I think hate voting... I don't think people really feel good about doing that, but research has shown, and my own personal experience has shown, that conservatives are more comfortable being unprincipled than liberals are. Mm. I don't know why that is, but that's why you've got so much conservative media out there that's always exaggerating and bending the truth and whatever, but. You know, a similar liberal media, there's not as much. Because to do what, say, Rush Limbaugh does or what all those other people do, you've got it. Your scruples have to be basically non-existent. You know what you're saying is malarkey and nonsense. You know you're pulling the wool over a whole bunch of people's eyes. But apparently conservative people are okay with that. I guess they convince themselves it's for the greater good or some dumb thing. And liberal people, their conscience is harder to ignore, I guess. So I think a lot of liberals are like, no, I just can't hate vote. That seems so dumb. But conservatives were totally, oh, no, I can do it. I can set my conscience aside for this.
We are super over time.
Oh, sorry.
Didn't mean to. And we got another one to do. So, you guys all hold tight for a week, and we'll be back. And in the meantime, enjoy your holiday stuff. We will talk a lot more about Christmas next episode. Most specifically, the tactics in our war on it.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.